Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
I know lots of people are following this Web Summit case, which is ongoing at the High Court. And the judge in that case has made a strong intervention this morning, urging the parties in the case to settle it before proceeding further. This is Mr. Justice Michael Toomey, who said he wants to say a few words at the start of today's proceedings, in which the former Web Summit director, Dara Hickey, is expected to begin his evidence. Now, he has encouraged them to sit down and talk this out, saying that mediation is far better than litigation. He says one is saying black, the other is saying white. The case is only really beginning today, he went on, with the hearing of factual evidence. He said this is an opportune time for me to say a few words directly to the parties. He talked about how this is going to go on for 2 months. He said every effort should be made to find a resolution to the case, not just today, but every day before it is too late. And he went on to say that one party making an offer of a settlement was not a sign of weakness, but a sign of a sophisticated and intelligent business person. So after the judge had made his remarks, the court adjourned. So they're going to come back, I would imagine, just before lunch. We're hearing confirmed now. So that the parties can take on board what he had said, and that might take a little more time. So we'll get to hear as the day goes on whether he heeds that advice, whether both sides heed the advice from Justice Michael Toomey in the last little while. Now, if you've never heard of district heating before, you're not alone. The concept of a network of insulated pipes delivering heated water to people's homes is new here, but it is something that people living in European countries like Copenhagen and in Hamburg, or European cities rather, like Copenhagen and Hamburg, already take for granted. Well, just how extensive could a potential rollout be in this country? Would it help reduce emissions? And if the government doesn't have the political will to introduce metered water charges, would charges be more acceptable if the water is hot when it arrives into a home? Well, here to tell us more about what life would be like without ever having to turn on the immersion again is Pauline O'Reilly, CEO of the Irish District Energy Association, and Associate Professor Paula Carroll, who's a member of UCD's Energy Institute and its Centre for Business Analytics. And Paul, I'm going to start with you. I mean, the concept of this has been made possible by legislation which was introduced 2 years ago. We're outliers in Europe because, as I said, it's quite common on the continent. Will you explain what we're talking about here?
Thanks, Claire. Yeah, good question. We're not used to it at all, so I think you might have scared people a little bit by saying water charges. This is something different. This isn't just the water that comes through your taps. This comes in through pipes in the same way that your gas does if you have gas central heating. And yes, we're an outlier because we don't have a history of it at all. But this technology is, you know, long established, very efficient, works really well. They have it in the UK, so it's not as if it's kind of just a continental European thing. They have London, for example, has lots of these district heating networks, and they work really well.
But it's not free, is it? Just so we're clear.
It's not free, but in the same way as, you know, your heating in your house isn't free, so you pay for your gas if you've got a gas boiler. About 40% of us have oil, so we pay for our oil to heat our homes at the moment. So this would be a different way of heating our home.
And is it cheaper than using fossil fuel or other ways like heat pumps?
Well, it's associated with heat pumps, but at a higher level, because it's a network of things, it does have economies of scale. So the end result is that, yes, it helps reduce emissions, and yes, it is more efficient for the end user. So in our homes and in our buildings, it would be more cost effective as well.
OK, well, Pauline O'Reilly, as I said, is CEO of the Irish District Energy Association, but perhaps more familiar to people, Pauline, as the former Green Party senator. You've just taken up this role with District Energy Ireland. And I was just looking at the membership there. There are energy companies on there. There's engineering firms who are members as well. What's in it for them? Why are they behind this project?
Well, there's a variety of members, as you say, Claire, and it's a really exciting opportunity. Codema, who people may have heard of in Dublin, who are rolling out low-carbon solutions, are not-for-profit. So, look, there's a variety. But essentially, what this is something that has been rolled out across Europe. But what we have here, I guess, is a real opportunity because we're trying to move our heating system to something that's low carbon and looking at, you know, what's the best option. And it's actually already been rolled out in Tala. So I went there last week and visited the TU campus, and going down to their boiler room, you can see the old gas boilers that are completely turned off there, and replacing that is a few pipes. And the hot water, instead of being, I suppose, heated there on site, is coming from across the road, and it's coming from a central kind of repository for heat. And it's going there, it's going to the county council building as well. And then looking to the future, it could heat potentially the hospital. So there's, and then, you know, housing that would be close by, you know, within a few kilometres. So as Paula said, there's efficiencies of scale. And that's what really district heating is about. So it's just really like if I look at in an individual house, you've got your boiler, you've got your heat pump. This is moving that out and it's being done somewhere else. And then you have pipes putting in the heated water.
Sorry to cut across your point, but just trying to get my head around this. So you wouldn't have hot water stored in your house anymore. It would just be coming to you on an as needs, as you need it, coming through those pipes.
That's right. And you wouldn't be, turning something like gas, like oil, like electricity into heat within a home. You're doing that elsewhere. And, you know, what's really, I suppose, exciting here for us in Ireland is we do have quite a lot of waste heat. So this is, at the moment, a lot of industry is sending that waste heat up into the atmosphere. It's not being used for anything. And so certainly the one in Tala and the ones that are being looked at, Blanchardstown is another example, are looking at using waste heat from data centres, from other industries, instead of it going up into the atmosphere, it being used and it heating hospitals, sports centres, county council buildings that are all looking for ways to decarbonise as it is. This is a win-win for everybody. It's not controversial in the sense that, we all know, particularly in Ireland, heat is one of the, if not the main user of energy in the country. So we have to look for a way to resolve that. And this is...
Well, it's not controversial, except I suppose you have data centres, which are very controversial, offering this other service off the back end, which might be a good public relations exercise for them.
Well, look, I'm not here to represent, I'm not here for or against data centres, but there is waste heat being, you know, coming from data centres. And there is also, the availability, I guess, of new technology like heat pumps. And instead of individually installing these in things like hospitals, this is simply a way of being efficient, having it centrally done, and then the pipes coming. And that's all it is. It's no more or less complicated, even though it always sounds complicated when you start talking about it.
But I wonder how disruptive it is, or how much upheaval is involved in getting those pipes in place.
Well, actually, interestingly, Dublin City Council has already put in some pipes. So even before the Lewis went down, there are some pipes underneath those tracks. I think what we're looking at here, and certainly from the organisations that I would represent, they're looking for, I suppose, anchor large users, and then it moves from that position. So, for instance, hospitals. I know Monaghan County Council has put out a tender for district heating for Monaghan as well. There's opportunities for Galway, for Waterford. So there's an amount of work, but I mean, we're not talking about, we're talking about weeks rather than years for that. Mm-hmm. It's simply pipes, and I've seen the pipes myself. It's like, you know, it's like the insulation around your hot water tank, and the pipes then are highly insulated, and then they bring the water to and from.
Okay.
Predominantly some of the large users first.
Some of the companies who make and supply the pipes are members of the Irish District Energy Association, which I saw too. Paula, is there an urban-rural divide here? Because clearly clearly it's not going to be suitable for people who live very far away from the big urban hubs.
That's absolutely true. I'm not so sure that it's an urban-rural divide as such, as, you know, everybody has heating needs. We need heat for, you know, space heating and water heating. But I think there's probably more potential for district heating networks, obviously, in the densely populated areas, so the urban or the city areas. But back to your question about, you know, these district heating networks, they're proven technologies. They work in other cities. So there's a huge potential for Ireland Inc., if you like, to meet our climate action targets. So I would see it as identifying, you know, where is it working well? Where could it work well? There's a very nice report by the SEAI about identifying suitable sites. And Pauline mentioned there the Talla district heating scheme that's, you know, getting up and running. I think we can use those demonstration sites to see how well it works, you know, what are the issues that are faced and what can we do then to roll that out to other suitable areas as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's some kind of policy things that need to be done. If I can just give you a quick example, here in UCD we do have a small district heating network, but we are a very large energy user. So it's not as if UCD would be a suitable site for serving its neighbourhood. You know, we could improve UCD by perhaps using geothermal as a source as well. So there are policy gaps around, for example, geothermal as a component of the mix.
Okay, because it's not a regulated area, Pauline, yet. Is that the case?
Yeah, so the CRU is to come on as the regulator. There is a heat bill that is already drafted. So I guess some of the work that I'll be doing over the next while is to really, I suppose, look at that heat bill, look at, you know, what kind of funding models are going to be helpful. And, you know, some of our members will have done this in other countries, and people can always advise as to what's worked and what hasn't worked, but ultimately, it is a decision for government to decide how to roll this out and the regulation of it. But what we've seen from other countries is that it really has co-benefits, so that you can at a very low cost, you can have public buildings, as I say, like hospitals, which are probably the first ones that we're looking at, hospitals, universities, council buildings, and then nearby you can have housing that is also run from district heating. And
mm-hmm.
as these things are rolled out and as we get the networks up and running, and as Paula said, there's already work underway. There's a centre of excellence in the SEAI and they've looked at where might be the places to start. And that's really what we're looking at.
But, and the commitment, Pauline, is, you've mentioned low cost there, that this would be cheaper than heating your water, whether it's in a hospital or in a home, the way we do it now, in the main using fossil fuels.
I think that it'll take a little bit of time, but certainly, you know, you're not going to get people coming on board if it's going to be more expensive. So it is a matter of, I suppose, the regulator looking at that.
Mm-hmm.
But for Ireland overall, for Ireland to reduce its emissions, this heat is a key part. Like it has to be a key part of that. And so there's already a commitment there. It's just a matter, I think, of working out the policy measures that are going to work for Ireland. But so many of the councils already have put out tenders because it's part of their climate action plans to look at district heating for their areas. So they'll be looking at what might be the public buildings
that it could
be anchors. Yeah.
Okay, Paula, can I bring you in on that question of how much heavy lifting this district heating can do in the context of our emissions reduction? Because is the water not being heated initially on the central site using gas or electricity?
It can or it could be. So that's one of the things, is it's this overall whole energy balance. So when we use district heating networks, we do want to move to using renewable energy sources. So if you take Germany, for example, where they have a long history of district heating network, in their next rollout and upgrades, they're moving to renewable energy sources for their district heating network. So they'll be using things like geothermal, or in our case, even if we're using electricity, if our electricity is coming from clean sources like wind, it makes that overall balance work out well.
Well, thank you both for joining us. That's Paula Carroll from UCD and Pauline O'Reilly, who's CEO of the Irish District Energy Association.